Any questions or concerns before we dive in? How's everybody doing? Have a good week? Everybody gonna go see Adam Savage?
Oh,
yeah, I was thinking about it. I saw that email this morning. No, I might take some credit off if you go though. I've got nothing against Adam Savage. Okay, let's hop in. So, last class, we talked a little bit just generally about switching losses in a half bridge, assuming a current that stays unidirectional over the switching period. What are the different types of turn off and turn on transitions that we might incur in this inductively clamped half bridge type switching configuration? And which of those do we like? Which of those do we not like? We had talked about overlap loss in some significant detail in the previous classes, reverse recovery, we mentioned briefly in the introduction and covered in 481. So we moved on to talk a little bit more about this COSS loss and to get into the effect of the nonlinearity of the capacitance. We'll finish that up today and then start moving into resonant circuit analysis to look more at this type of transition, one where we have the potential to achieve zero volt switching. But how do we analyze that and figure out whether or not we do achieve it, what the dead time should be, what the conditions for zero volt switching are. Okay. So this capacitance that's resonating during this interval, this COSS, is nonlinear with respect to voltage. We talked a little bit about why last time, but that creates a problem for us. We're not used to working with nonlinear elements or voltage-dependent capacitances. As a reminder, this COSS is CDS plus CGD. CRSS is CGD. Looking at these two together and noting that we're on a log scale, COSS is approximately CDS, right? The sum of these two things, the CGD is about 10x smaller or more. So COSS is mostly just CDS. It's a little bit larger than CDS proper. Okay. So the approach we discussed last time for dealing with this nonlinearity was to develop these linear equivalent capacitances. We did that by comparing things like charge and energy. What does the expression for charge look like in a linear capacitor for energy? And where can we get to with a nonlinear capacitor before we have to have some additional level of insight? Those two equations here below the dashed line, we can't solve these integrals any further without knowing some details of the C of VC function, how the capacitance depends on voltage. If we can fit that analytically with some expression, then we can solve this integral by hand, solve an expression for the total energy. More often than not, we don't have a great analytical curve fit expression. We just have the numerical curve like you'd get out of the data sheet. So what we can do then is plug that in and solve this integral numerically. We do that by equating what we get out of that to what that charge should be if it's a linear capacitor, what the energy should be if it's a linear capacitor. We have these linear equivalent capacitors, Ceq, Q, which is a linear capacitor, which will have the same total charge stored at a voltage VDC as the nonlinear capacitor. Ceq, E will have the same total energy at a voltage VDC as the full nonlinear capacitor. These are very specific in how the linear equivalent capacitor is equivalent. Okay. Ceq, E will have a different energy at any other voltage than the nonlinear capacitor, and it will have a different charge at all voltages. There happens to be one arbitrary voltage where it might be the same, but this has no guarantee, has no reason to believe that this one would have the same charge because it's the equivalent based on energy, and vice versa. Ceq, Q will have a different amount of energy stored in it, even when it has the same charge as the nonlinear capacitor. Okay? So you have to be careful on how you apply these. You can only use Ceq, Q when you're solving for a characteristic that depends on the charge at this voltage. That makes sense? So, to see how these apply, what we're going to do is look at COSS losses, and again, this half-bridge type configuration. What I'm going to look at on the next two slides is the turn-on of what we've been calling M2 of the low-side device. Assuming this is a full hard switching transition, but I'm going to assume just going to look at the turn on transition where the top side device has already turned off, and I'm going to assume there's no overlap, no reverse recovery, no diode conduction, anything else that we've talked about previously. I'm going to assume both of these devices are more or less just ideal switches with some resistance. So M2 itself, I'm going to approximate as a switch with some resistance R, with closing at time t equals zero. Okay. So I have a voltage here, VDC. Current, I'm going to neglect. Let's say this current. Grabbed a general half bridge here, but I'm not going to worry about what that inductor is doing. I'm really just looking at a circuit that looks like VDC, CDS, CDS, switch resistor, where this switch closes at time t equals zero, and my initial condition is such that V switch at time t is less than zero is equal to VDC. I'm starting with the switch node voltage high, and I'm going to turn on the switch, short it out, and I'm going to have losses associated with those capacitors, right? I'm going to have losses from discharging this capacitor and losses from charging the high side capacitor. And on the next two slides, I'm going to look at those two losses independently. So the next one will be M2. I won't worry about what's going on up here. I'm just going to say, considering the nonlinearity, what's my energy loss when I take this capacitance and short it out? Then on the slide after, I'm going to not worry about this capacitor. I'm going to say, what's the loss when I charge this capacitor through a resistance from 0 volts to VDC? Okay. And we're going to do so considering both of these are nonlinear capacitances, so functions of the voltage applied. Just for clarity, this should be VDS1, VDS2. Don't have anywhere to put it. Okay. Make sense? Okay. So first one, I'm just going to look at this loop here. It's resketched on the next page. I have some capacitance, which is nonlinear with respect to the voltage applied to it, and I'm shorting that out through M2. Okay. So here, this is this low side device, and the initial voltage on it, V switch, is VDC. Here I'll say VC of D is less than zero is equal to VDC. Initially, this capacitance has a voltage on it. Then I close the switch. I want to solve for what's the energy loss in the resistor. And as you'll remember from homework one, I'm doing this as a proxy that energy is going to be lost whether that resistor is there or not. Kind of have seen already and know beforehand my answer is not going to depend on the value of the resistance. It's going to hold whether it goes to zero or not. But as a proxy, I'm going to solve for that. The total energy lost in the resistor, I can say, is integral from time zero to infinite time of the voltage on the resistor VR times the current through the resistor IR dt. Right. Just by definition, voltage times current on the resistor is the power loss, and I integrate that from zero to infinity after I close this switch to get the total energy. Then I can manipulate this expression, IR, because I've got a single loop here. The resistor is the current in the capacitor. So I could say IR is IC. And IC is C, which is nonlinear, times dVC dt. So if I plug that in, my energy in the resistor, integral from 0 to infinity of VR times C of VC, dVC dt, dt. The same way, I can replace this VR term. From time 0 to infinity, the switch is closed. So the voltage on the resistor is just the negative of the voltage on the capacitor. I can say VR is equal to minus DC, and I'm just going to plug that in here. Okay, now what can I do with this? This part out here, having an integral in terms of time multiplied a derivative with respect to time, implies that I can apply the chain rule for integrals, which will allow me to change my integral in terms of time to an integral in terms of voltage. My integral will be minus VC, C of VC, dVC. Taking these two together, applying the chain rule, I get rid of the time integral. I have to change my limits now to limits in terms of voltage. We did this last time, perhaps. And those limits are going to be the voltage VC at time t equals 0 and the voltage VC at time t equals infinity. So I know those at time t is equal to 0. I start at VDC on the capacitor, and as I let this thing go out to infinity, eventually that capacitor voltage is going to go to 0. I could solve back through the operation of the circuit to figure that out, but just looking at this, I know my initial condition, it starts here. When I short it out with the resistor, eventually at time infinity, it's going to go to 0 voltage, right? Okay. So I can pull this negative sign out and flip my limits of integration, and then we'll be left with ER is equal to the integral 0 to VDC of VC, C of VC, dVC. Can I say anything about this expression? That is here the total energy stored in the nonlinear capacitor at a voltage VDC. This is the energy in the cap, which we can write as 1/2 times my energy equivalent VDC squared. Does that make sense? Well, yeah. If I know how much energy is stored in the cap, in this configuration where I short out the cap, I'm going to lose all the energy that the cap had in at the start. Eventually goes to zero. Whatever energy I started with in that cap, that's all dissipated. So from this, from shorting out the cap, I'm going to lose an energy, 1/2 CEQE VDC squared, to allow me to calculate the initial energy in that capacitor. Okay, let's look at the next one. This is a subcircuit that's going to model the charging of the high side device. And I've rotated things around here to make it like a general equivalent circuit. But my equivalent circuit is the voltage source, high side capacitance, switch resistance in a loop. And I've redrawn that here. Voltage source, high side cap, switch resistance, all in one loop. Okay. For this device, for this subcircuit, VC of T is less than zero is zero. My capacitor voltage starts at zero. And then I close this switch. Eventually, as time goes to infinity, the capacitor voltage is going to go to VDC, get charged up. Okay. So let's do the same thing. Energy lost on the resistor, integral from zero to infinity, VR, IR, DT. IR defined in this polarity. We still have IR is IC, is C of VC, DVC DT. But now VR is VDC minus VC. I'm going to plug those in. VR is integral from zero to infinity of VDC minus VC, C of VC, DVC DT, DT. Again, I'll try apply the chain rule, swap my limits of integration in terms of VC. It's going to start at zero and go to VDC. VDC minus VC, C of VC, DVC. Okay, then I'm going to break up what's in the parentheses here into two separate integrals of the two terms in that expression. So I'll have ER, in this case, is VDC times the integral from 0 to VDC of C of VC DVC minus integral from 0 to VDC, C of VC, times VC, DVC. Do you recognize anything here? Is this term? This is energy stored in the cap. What is this term? This is the charge supplied to the cap. And I got a VDC out in front of it. So using my linear equivalence, energy lost is VDC times the total charge in the cap, which is VDC times my charge equivalent cap, minus total energy, in the cap at a voltage of VDC. I'm gonna keep my colors consistent here. But. The energy lost in the process of charging this capacitor does not just depend on the energy equivalent capacitance, the energy calculation. It also depends on the charge. Does that make sense? Well, intuitively, one way I could write the energy loss on this resistance is what is the total energy supplied minus the energy that actually makes it into the cap. Total energy supplied would be VDC times the integral of the current, and the integral of the current is the total charge supplied, which is total charge times VDC. That's what's supplied. Energy that makes it to the cap is this. So the difference between the two is anything that's lost on this resistor. Makes some sense. Okay. But still, somewhat of an interesting result that the energy lost here cannot be determined solely by knowing the energy equivalent capacitor. More interesting result on the next page, let's combine these two together. So if I have the full circuit, I'm going to have the energy loss from discharging this capacitance in this loop, and then the energy loss from charging this one in this loop. Those are the two things we just solved. So in the same transition, I'll have both of those. I should not have drawn that line, huh? Excuse me. See if we can get rid of it. So if I add both of these things together, the total half bridge loss from one of these hard switching transitions, call E C total, coming up with some name here, is going to be the two energies we just derived, which looks like two slides back, 1/2 CEQE VDC squared. Plus two, excuse me there. One from one slide back, which was VDC squared CEQQ minus 1/2 CEQE VDC squared. And when I look at this expression, I've got 1/2 CEQE minus 1/2 CEQE. Those two terms cancel. And the total loss equal to VDC squared CEQQ. So the total energy loss from these COSS capacitances does not depend on the energy equivalent, which implies that things like this plot given in the data sheet, which tells you the total energy stored in the capacitance, can't be used to calculate the energy losses when you hard switch those capacitances. It'll give you partial, it'll tell you what the losses are from discharging this one, but that's canceled out by charging the high side device. Instead, you have to use the total charge to be able to calculate this energy loss. That's an interesting result. Doesn't depend on the energy calculation, only depends on charge. Now this, one caveat, only applies if CDS1 and CDS2 are the same, i.e. your high side device and your low side device are the same thing. Because I canceled these two terms, this was the energy equivalent capacitance of the low side device. This was the energy equivalent capacitance of the high side device at the same voltage. If I, for example, say this were to come up someday, have a diode and a MOSFET that have different capacitances, and I was calculating the COSS losses of that, these things wouldn't cancel because these two are different, come from different CV curves. Okay. This is from M2, these from M1. Yeah.
So we just look at the energy loss and the COSS was M2 from all that area, M2 from all the day.
So this is the energy loss during one type of switching transition, namely this thing here, right? Where I fully short out that capacitance and charge the other one, okay? So it's not globally the loss when M2 turns off, like I showed here. Depending on the direction of current, when M2 turns off, I may have a nice resonant transition, or I may have nothing. And then when M1 turns on, this full loss. So it depends on the details of your circuit operation. But it is the loss when I have this full COSS loss. Okay. When I am turning on a device with full voltage across it. If I looked at, for example, one of these partial losses, and I wanted to calculate the COSS losses of that, I'd use the same process, but my voltage limits would be different. I wouldn't be going zero to VDC, and VDC to zero, would be going from this voltage to VDC and from VDC minus this voltage down to zero on the other cap. Okay. Other than that, limits of integration would change. Calculation would stay the same though. Other questions? Okay, to be able to apply this, you need a way to be able to calculate these integrals. Integral of the capacitance with respect to voltage, an integral of the capacitance times the voltage with respect to voltage. To do that, what I have, here's an example of it, but first I'll show posted to the website on the materials page is a tool to help you do that. That I use. Minimize here. And back, man. Go to the materials page of the website, top link called Plot Digitizer, just some open source software that I've mirrored from my website. Comes up with this unstable version warning, but what you can do is say, load an image from wherever. I have saved one to my desktop here. And this tool is going to help me get the numerical data for a curve on this plot. I'm going to tell it I've got a 2D XY plot. It'll want me to align the axes. I do so by clicking at the start and end of the x-axis. Being probably more careful than I am. Click kind of in that corner, x1, x2, y1, y2. For that, it'll tell me the calibration's complete. And I can tell it the values of these axes. So x starts at, can't really see, 0 and goes to 500. Y starts at 0.1 and goes to 10,000 and is log scale. That'll calibrate. Now it knows where my plot is, what the x and y values are within that space. And then I can go through and click points on my COSS curve to get the data very carefully. So my data is good. When I'm done, view data. Here is the C versus V curve. Left column is voltage, right column is the capacitance it found. It's going to be in units relative to whatever you told it. So I told it this axis goes from 0.1 to 10,000. The units there were picofarads. So the capacitance in units of picofarads. This can be then copied into MATLAB to do whatever you want with that curve. Okay. You are welcome to use that. You never have to, but you will have homework assignments where expected that you can take a COSS plot and be able to run some numerical calculations with that. That's one of the easier ways to do it. Okay, then this is just an example there. Some plot, I ran through the digitizer, brought the data back, copied it into MATLAB, then interpolated it, because I didn't want to have to put 1,000 points by hand. So instead I used this interp function to get me the data in between. Just linearly interpolate to give me a 10 millivolt resolution all the way through. And then I can do things like calculate the cumulative integral of capacitance times voltage, which will tell me the total energy at any given voltage, or the energy equivalent capacitance, which is that energy times 2 divided by the voltage squared. Just to check things, I plotted the data that I pulled from this digitizer on top of the image from the data sheet. See that this red dashed line matches up well with COSS. Then over here, I calculated the total energy and plotted it on top of this energy plot from the data sheet. You see that it matches up very well. It is correct to their measurements of the device. Okay. Questions on that? All right. The final comment here is that when you look in the device data sheet, in addition to these plots, you'll also find some values listed in the table. Generally, you'll get a value for COSS. And this value is completely meaningless for nearly all intents and purposes, okay? This is the capacitance COSS at a certain voltage, generally a rather high voltage, because they'd like the number in the table to look good and this capacitance drops as you go to higher voltage. But this is not any sort of net parameter, it's just looking at the plot and telling you, here's this point. Okay, that's not useful. Any of the things we've looked at, energy, charge, any other characteristic depend on details of this full curve. Now this is actually a more recent device where they also included a couple of equivalents. So COER is our CEQ, E, the energy equivalent capacitance, but still only for one voltage range, going from 0 to 480. If you go 0 to 300, because VDC is 300, or 100 to 480, because you have partial soft switching, this won't be the correct value. And then this time-related output capacitance is a little bit of a nebulous concept. I say down here, it gives the same charging time when going from 0 to 80% VDSS. Turns out what that time is depends heavily on how you charge it, whether it's through a constant current or a resonance or a resistance. Generally, I believe most data sheets put this as resistive charging, which is the time constant that will match for resistive charging. But if you charge it with the constant current source, that's not going to be valid. Okay. And again, only for some certain voltage range. So these often cannot be used either. But I commend the datasheet manufacturer for at least trying to put something useful in here rather than this, which has very little meaning. Okay. So here, just an example to show how this plays out, drive home the point of the difference in these. This is from a reference here that looks at the equivalent capacitances we talked about for a specific configuration of a switching circuit, as well as two that we didn't talk about and won't cover in any detail. So this is our charge equivalent. This is energy equivalent. This is an impedance equivalent, which is the capacitance that will result in the same energy on a series impedance during charging. So if this is a resistor, this capacitance will give me the loss in that resistor. We already solved that. Capacitance is going to look like, in that case, CEQQ minus CEQE, same as we solved. The more interesting reason for having this is if this is an inductance, it'll tell me the change in energy stored in that inductance, which will tell me the change in current during the process of charging this capacitance. And this one over here is a certain time equivalent, call it TZVS, which is the capacitance that'll tell me the exact time it takes for the voltage to go from zero to a final value. Everything we talked about, charge and energy, none of that's time related. This capacitance and calculating it depends on exactly what the inductance is and the initial current. It becomes a little more complicated. We won't focus on those. But here, and in the next slide, just showing a simulation of taking the voltage on the capacitor from zero to some final value through some impedance. And I simulated here the nonlinear capacitance and then each of these equivalent linear capacitances together. And I let this circuit just go, start, same initial condition, same start time, and it goes until the voltage on the capacitor reaches some value, VDC. Okay. This is plotting the energy versus time. You see that when these curves stop, when it's reached VDC, only two of them have the same energy. That's the full nonlinear and the energy equivalent capacitance. Everything else takes a little bit more energy to get from zero to VDC. Okay. When I look at charge, only two have the same total charge going from zero to VDC, this black one, charge equivalent, and the full nonlinear capacitance. I look at the resonant dynamics again. Only two go from zero to the final voltage in the same amount of time. It's the nonlinear capacitance and this green one, which is the time equivalent. And then over here, if I look at the change in inductor current, if I charge this capacitance from an inductor, only two have the same final inductor current. That's a different color here. The nonlinear one and the impedance equivalent. Details of these two, and actually there's another one based on resistive charging, but other equivalent capacitances you can find in that paper, but you won't be expected to be able to calculate those for this class. The point I'm trying to drive home here is that depending on what you're solving, the correct value of a linear equivalent is going to change. You can see all four of these are different values, you know, which you want to solve. That's going to be true. You have the nonlinear capacitance that varies with voltage in the real circuit. The behaviors are going to depend on the full details of that curve. If you replace it with just one value, you're losing a lot of information. You can select that one value to calculate one thing, but everything else would be wrong. Generally, if you don't want to put in the effort to calculate all of them, this one's easy to calculate and it tends to be kind of in the middle of the pack, give you a reasonable thing. Okay? So to be correct, you definitely have to use the correct capacitance always. You're just trying to get an estimate using the charge equivalent capacitance as just a general linear equivalent. It'll be wrong for calculating things, but it should be closer than, you know, impedance equivalent is the biggest one, energy equivalent is the smallest one. Charge equivalent capacitor, just being the average with respect to voltage, falls out somewhere in the middle. It can give reasonable values for different characteristics. Questions on nonlinear capacitors? Comments?
So for charge equivalent capacity, when we extract the numerical data from the tool, average, and then by, and what about the energy equivalent capacity? Do you get MATLAB coding to show?
Yeah, so that's, I mean, that's calculated in the example. So here, the energy, I calculate the integral of C times V with respect to V. Hume traps, the function in MATLAB that calculates the numerical integral and reports what the integral is at every point. Traps calculates one integral over the whole thing. Hume traps, the cumulative trapezoidal integration, tells me at every Vx, here's the integral from 0 to Vx. And then to get the energy equivalent capacitance, 2 times the energy divided by Vdc squared. So this is going to give me back a vector that tells me at every voltage, here's what the energy equivalent capacitance is. If I want to do charge, then delete this part, times Vx, because I'm just integrating the capacitance with respect to voltage. That'll give me charge, and then I divide by Vdc. Or use the function mean over the voltage range you want. Is that right? Absolutely. So every equivalent is very precisely defined. So the energy equivalent, any of these, this is here. Forget, I can look at the next slide. Is that 200 volts? So this is CEQE at 200 volts DC. If I change the voltage, the energy equivalent capacitance would change. Capacitance that's nonlinear with respect to voltage is going to change. All of these are only defined for the precise operating conditions you tell it you want to analyze for.
This one, we went over the energy and the charge equivalent capacitance and kind of the instances where we care about those. Are we going to discuss the instances when you care about, like, the time and the impedance?
So I'm not going to ever test you guys on knowing anything about these two. Okay. I'm mentioning them here as an FYI. The answer there isn't fully no. You'll see in the next section we get into, we're going to start analyzing things like the resonant transition and the time dynamics, which in the time dynamics, I should use this. In the inductor dynamics, I should use this. It starts to get complicated when you want to calculate net behaviors of a circuit. So anything I'll either tell you, it'll either be a problem that's solvable using charge and energy equivalents, or I'll tell you which to use or assume it's this value. Okay, but I won't expect you guys to know. I haven't shown you how to derive these two. I won't give them to you and expect you to know how to use them. There's here as an FYI. There's other characteristics, and other characteristics would require their own equivalent if you want to model something other than energy for charge. Okay. Next, we are going to get into a tool called state plane analysis. It's useful for the time domain analysis of resonant circuits. 5 minutes left, and I go over a lot, so try to make up some of that time. I'll just let you guys go early. We'll pick up here on Friday. Okay. Thanks.